Welcome to the Bangers List podcast. Julian, Daniel, welcome back, boys. How are we?
Good, mate. Good. How are you?
Fucking fantastic.
Fantastic as well, mate.
Look, I'm really excited about this week.
Great time to be alive.
Yep, great time to be alive. I'm so excited. We're doing, this is the Daniel special, of course. We're looking at a band called
Avenged fucking Sevenfold.
Oh, let's go. We'll be focusing on their song, Mattel. So let's just jump into a sample.
Oh, really? I'm from Play School.
And I'm from Mattel. Well, I'm not really from Mattel. I'm actually from a smaller company that was purchased in a leveraged buyout.
Just kidding. That's not the sample.
This is the real sample,
guys.
All right. Sorry, me and Joel thought we'd line Daniel up for that one. Here's a real sample.
And it seems we found ourselves in...
So, the Bangers List is usually about bangers, Daniel. So, what's happening here?
How's it not a banger, mate? Fucking already trying to get me triggered.
20 seconds into the episode and you've already upset him.
We knew this was coming. I've been talking about, I think I've talked about these guys at least once in every single podcast. I sprinkled them in. I've been waiting for years and years to talk about them. We've been doing this podcast since 2019.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's on and off since 2019.
That's also how long you've been waiting for them to release new music.
Well,
too,
yeah.
Is that fair?
So and it's been 7 years between records, and obviously you chuck a pandemic in the middle of all that, it can put a little bit of a
hole. You take at least 3 years off there.
That's right. Just how it goes, but it's here. It's the moment we've all been waiting for, and yes, Mattel.
And for everyone that doesn't know Avenged Sevenfold that listens to us, I feel like that's a very small niche pocket of people, right? But if you haven't checked out Avenged Sevenfold, this is your favourite song off this new album,
It's the album is very much – it's something you need to experience as a whole, in my opinion, and I think that was the complete intention of the band. It was to make it something that you listen to in its entirety, ideally, you know, front to back. There's, you know, songs that kind of – mesh together a little bit, and it's got a theme, and it's in a way you could almost consider it like a concept album of sorts, but not exactly. But you get what I'm saying. Like it's something that it's hard to pick a standout because I think it's meant to very much be listened to in its entirety. But the reason I picked this one because it is probably on the heavier side of all the tracks on Life Is But a Dream, the title of their recent release. So if you compare that to other songs that are on there, they get a little jazzy, they get a little funky, they get a little Daft Punky.
Yeah, Daft Punky, that's like,
what a fucking sick rhyme. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Just came to me, man.
Bars.
Well done.
And I was saying I can't do lyrics. Like,
yeah, mate, you're a natural.
It. All
just
over
write,
it.
Just become an A7X tribute band.
Yeah.
But like a really
If I had the talent to play like Sinister Gates, I wouldn't.
Well, you've got his guitar, mate.
I do.
There is some fucking deep lore here in the Bangers List that we need to share with the
yeah.
people. So I'll let you explain it, but the punchline is that Daniel is quite the avid A7X enjoyer, to the point where he stayed up till what, 4 a.m. to get on a whitelist to buy an NFT,
something like that.
Tell us that story.
Okay, how far back do we need to go?
Before we get started, to really highlight this point, here you go, boys. Here's a scratchy each. This is very important. This is for all the hard work you've done with the podcast.
Right. Yeah.
So take one each. There's a $1 scratchy or a scratch it, as it might be known. Julian, I'll give you yours. Scratch it right now, Daniel. Scratch it right now.
So
Julian, here's yours.
Before we started recording, Joel handed each of us a coin.
Yep.
And neither of us had any idea what the fuck those were because we haven't used them in years.
What's the rules on this?
You scratch it off. So my thank you to you guys.
Any win goes towards buying new mic stands for the Bangers List.
Yeah, so I couldn't afford to pay you guys or get you a good present. So let's just do this. And this will also come back to haunt us all later, of course. So let's see if anyone wins because, you know, everyone wins on a scratchy. You hear the stories all the time. Yeah, I went in and I bought fucking 1,000 scratchies and I won $2. All right, so me, I've won nothing. Great. So for my $1, I've got nothing. What about you guys? What did you get?
Hang on, I'm just making a lot of noise. I don't even know if I won anything.
Okay, you didn't win anything? Great. Daniel, what about you, mate? Did you win?
Not this time.
So, before we talk about everything else Avenged Sevenfold related, we'll talk about, you know, what Julian's led us into here. So you bought an NFT.
Can you look at that and tell me if I want it? I don't know.
You bought an NFT. Nothing there, champion. And an NFT, as many people know, it stands for no fucking thanks or nice fucking transaction, bro. Is that correct?
I was going to say like that. It just meant you had brain damage. But
so it stands for non-fungible token, and there's something that's built upon the blockchain. And the blockchain in question this time was Ethereum. So you used Ethereum to buy yourself an Avenged Sevenfold NFT. Correct?
Absolutely correct.
Great. Yes. And they made 10,000 of them.
They made 10,000 of 10, them. 10,000.
And about 20 of them had really good rewards. That's the whole thing about NFTs. They try to sell them to you as utility. And my opinion is this, for everyone listening, 99.99999999999% of NFTs are fucking scams. All right? Get that through your white heads. And we'll keep going with Daniel's story because he's the one person that got the scratchy and had a win, which is very fucking rare. Doesn't happen in real life, yet here we are. So you bought an NFT and it was, what was it, mate?
Okay. Tell us about it.
All right. So how do I paint this picture here? I was on holiday in Wollongong with my partner.
Yep.
Visiting a family, and we were out on the piss the night before, watching a band, having a good old time. But I knew at the back of my mind that I was getting up nice and early to try and mint an NFT.
Mint, yeah.
And so minting process, Joel, can you explain the minting process?
It's just creating the item on a blockchain with a set of like random variables to create something that's meant to be unique.
Yeah, and at the time you don't know what exactly you're going to obtain.
So they'd announced they were releasing 20,000 NFTs?
10,000, yeah.
10,000 NFTs. Mm-hmm. And they were just releasing at the same time?
And all of these 10,000 are unique and have like different combinations of traits, but each one is unique. Each of those 10,000 is unique.
And 20 of them, which we'll find out in a minute, but 20 of them had a specific value.
30 of them, I think 30 of them had a specific.
So you hit a 30 out of 10,000.
30 out of 10,000, which if you do the math, it's
maths.
Yeah, quite unlikely that, sorry, do the maths.
Maths,
Maths
is not a word.
Do the mathematics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you were the very unlikely winner of, not winner, but person that minted the correct one to get some kind of like prize, we'll say. But the thing is, when you create or mint these NFTs, everyone buys them, the 10,000, they all buy them for the same price. You can't just buy the good one.
Yeah.
All right? It's the aftermarket where you can do all that shit. Mm-hmm. So you mint one and it's at the death bat. They're all death bats. Like there might be a picture of an Avenged Sevenfold related death bat. Yours looked a bit different. It was a very cool Sinister Gage related one. Yeah. And what happened from there, mate?
All right. And we should probably elaborate as well the purpose of this NFT project. It's called the Death Bats Club.
Shout
out. And it's basically, shout out to Death Bats.
Shout out to Death Bats Club, yeah.
Yeah. And
we'll be talking to you guys.
I couldn't stop thinking about it after we did that last week.
It begins,
week.
Yeah. It begins. Essentially what it is, it's the NFT or your specific NFT is like a token that represents your membership into the club.
Mm.
And it's an exclusive club and you need to, because it's an NFT, you need to purchase cryptocurrency, in this case Ethereum, to be able to be part of the project or become part of the club.
And those fees, mate, those on-ramp, off-ramp fees.
I had no idea what I was doing. So shout out to Joel over here fucking giving me the Ethereum for Dummies rundown because I had no fucking idea what I was doing.
And I'm still a dummy. Like it was the blind leading the blind, mate. Anyway.
Yeah. and essentially what it was the idea was that people who owned an NFT were part of the Death Bats Club and they got exclusivity to a degree. And each Death Bat Club would have each Death Bats Club token or NFT would have a perk of some description. Right, a perk being, say, anyone who has an NFT can cut to the front of a line at the show. Anyone who has that NFT can just be like, "See you guys," they can rock up
really
just before the show starts and cut to the front. Away
and
they go.
Just show their NFT. So there was actual functional use to them.
Yeah, there's functional use. There's
my
utility.
Experience with NFTs is like, we won't get too sidetracked, but like NFT bros, guys that you work with or people you know that do this really cool thing where they don't shut the fuck up about NFTs and like they're always talking about, bro, the blockchain, you've got to be plugged in the blockchain. None of them are fucking millionaires. Do you know what I mean? Like they're always the wannabes that they're not broke. They're about even. They might have $5,000 in
money to literally burn.
Do you know what I mean? But like they're never up. But people that are up don't fucking talk about it that often. Yeah. So my experience, it was like that and CoffeeZilla on YouTube talking about like, shit YouTube influencers that do rug pulls and stuff.
Yeah.
So my thoughts on NFTs are quite low, but it's really reassuring to see a band using it in a functional way.
It is. Like, shout, at the very least, at the end of the day, we should really say like, congrats to Adventure Time for what they are doing in the space.
It's so innovative.
So what did it, just quickly, what did it cost you? $700?
About 500.
So let's say 500.
500 Australian.
This is how my brain looks at it, right? Mm. So let's say you go see them another 5 times.
Mm.
So you've spent $100, like you've basically bought the VIP pack, which is, you know, about $100 extra on a ticket value anyway. So you've essentially prepaid the next 5 shows to get to the front of the line or to get a t-shirt and some shit.
That's
That's how my brain looks at that $500 initial outlay, but you've automatically got value for that in the future.
Mm-hmm. So that's right.
It wasn't worth $700. Like, we may have paid 700 Australian each 4 hours, but however, it was actually worth 0.07 of a whole Ethereum. And at the time, I think Ethereum was $3,000. So for the US people, it was probably closer to $300. But for us being in the third world country, Australia, we have to pay $700.
You get my point. Like,
but yeah, whatever point stands, it
immaterial
is an investment.
The vehicle that you used to purchase it, you outlaid $700.
Exactly. Yeah. So you get yours and you think, fuck, this looks pretty cool. And what does, you know, let me start with my boring story. I got mine and with, you know, got to join the club, you have to join the Discord, and then they gave everyone free tickets to the next show, like one free ticket to a show. But then yours, what did you get with yours? What did you get?
Okay, well, I still got that. Like, everyone got that. Everyone who signed up before a certain date got 2 free tickets to a show of their choice, a headlining show of their choice.
That's $100 a
show. So that's right.
Still $200 worth of
value. That's rewarding the people. That straight away says we're not doing this as a money grab. Like, we're doing this to create a community.
They're showing you the utility straight away.
Because it's on the blockchain, they've got complete control over it.
But see, they're also taking a gamble. It's like that all 10,000 of those people don't live in Los Angeles. So the next Los Angeles show, they don't make any fucking money.
Yeah, and they have talked extensively about that, which is why there's only 10,000 of them available.
But even if they had, they probably would have been like, fuck it, whatever. That's what we deserve that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be that
bad. And they've done things like overseas in America, they've done things like they've hosted like a Halloween party that only Deathbats Club members could attend, could RSVP to. So they had a couple of hundred people from the club that were there just partying with the band, you know. And they did another one in New York a couple of months earlier. So fingers crossed that they come and do something here in Australia.
I like that because it's not – it's exclusivity, but it's not doing it in a really snobby
– Yeah.
Remember – I can't remember which episode it was from a while back. Remember I said I was talking about that bloke from the 1975 – who
Matt
was
Healy.
Matt Healy, he was talking. I swear I talked about this with you guys. He was talking about meet and greets, paid meet and greets.
And he
was basically saying to the artist, like, you get someone to walk up to you and give you $50 and then you'll talk to them. But you won't talk to them until you give you $50. So this is the opposite of that. Yes, you've had an outlay, but again, it continues to pay dividends.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, they're making a bit of money from it, but they're going, okay, we're going to bring you into the, have like an inner circle.
Totally,
So that, I think that's cool.
No, it's great. Yeah. It's like, I've never been, you know, more thrilled about being a fan of a particular band. I'm just like, how lucky am I to be a fucking massive fan of this band that's just has the, you know, has the innovation just to come up with something like this and you know, create a community that they have. And
Yeah, anyway. We've been honey-dicking everyone long enough. Tell us what happened with your NFT.
I'm going to, you know, I could blabber on about it for so long. Like, over there I've got an exclusive vinyl for Life is But a Dream that was only available to Deathbats Club members. I got in on that and got that as soon as I could. They got lots of things that, you know, that make the club special.
This is not
a fantastic fantastic community. They got a Discord, everyone chats. The band comes into the Discord every now and then and chats to the guys and you know, I've even got to the point where I've got a follow on Twitter from Sinister Gates and M Shadows, and so it's like it's
Daniel.
Yeah.
What happened with your NFT?
Anyway, so what happened with my NFT?
It's going to be that old cunt at the fucking retirement home that tells stories that never end.
I do that sometimes as well. I do that, 100%.
I told you we need at least.
My post on Twitter.
That happened
to you, didn't it?
It did.
He did, there you go. All right, you get this NFT, it's got like glitter and all this other stuff.
Yeah,
on it.
It's like literally a gif. The NFT is literally a gif, like the actual token itself the picture of it is a gif. And they're going, what the fuck is flashing at me? I was like, isn't it meant to be like a bat with wings? I'm like, what's going on? And like, I'm scrolling through it and I'm like reading through the, I'm reading through, you know, all the, like the description and what it entails and what I get. And they're going, I scroll through, I go, okay. All right. It says Sinister Gates guitar. I'm like, wait, what? And I expand on that description, and I'm, for the next 3 years, well, at the time it was 2022, so It said for the next 3 years, you're going to get a guitar that has been played by Sinister Gates on tour, and it's going to get sent to you, no questions asked.
What?
And you're going to become part of the I should have led with the other one and should have.
Yeah, yeah.
The other part is you get to be a premium member of the Sinister Gates Guitar School, where you get what? To be part of like very
kill the street. We're done
exclusive
here.
Chats once every quarter with yep. him and his dad, who run a guitar school together, and it's like a they like a Twitch stream equivalent, basically, where you just ask questions and they just answer you.
Like an AMA.
Yeah. And look, that alone is worth like $300 a year Australian or something like that. That premium membership. No, the membership.
What's a guitar worth?
What's a guitar?
It was priceless, mate. I'm not going to put any value on it.
I'm actually sitting directly in front of it at the
moment.
Yeah,
we're getting very close to scam territory here.
Yeah.
Like a free guitar. And then you waited a year and you got a free guitar?
Well, I did, yeah.
It took a while. Free guitar.
It took a while, but I'm a patient guy and I understand these things.
He had to shred it a fair bit.
Yeah, I think it was made, this particular guitar was made in 2017, and they haven't toured Australia since 2014, I believe. So this is the first time it's been played by someone in Australia. So
okay,
it's
crazy.
So what kind of guitar is it?
So it's a Schecter Sinister Gates custom. It's okay. his own guitar that he's designed. That
and they're about $6,000 Australian dollars.
No, right? not that much.
$3,000 Australian dollars. That's a big win.
$2,500, $3,000. You add the signature to it and everything else.
And so, listeners, we know you're all about to pull out your wallets and buy a bunch of Ethereum to buy NFTs. Don't. This story is the fucking golden goose egg.
This is a cursory tale.
Research.
Research what's going on. Mm. I think, just in what you've told me, they've given out value for money.
Yep.
Like from what I've heard already, even for the plebs that didn't win the 30 out of 10,000, I know. But my plebs,
they love it.
Free concert tickets. Yeah. Get to the front of the line whenever you want. Like for as long as they're a band and they're offering that deal,
come party with us. Like whatever.
Yeah, exactly right. That kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean? And there'll be other exclusive things down the line for the Death Bats members. So I think that's great. But this is not it's not an invitation to just go out and buy NFTs that someone you watch on YouTube or a band or someone is shilling as well. There's a million tales of rug pulls.
Do your research if you're going to go down that path.
Do your research and then don't.
I was super skeptical. Obviously, I'm very glad that I took the leap, but I was just like, I don't know anything about crypto. And I had to.
Well, because they could have broken up the next week and be like, "Lol, sorry." This was
Joel was my consultant. I said, "I'm just like, what do I do? What's going on?" Like, because Joel was starting to talk about NFTs and crypto And we got this group chat and Joel and a couple of mates of ours, they're just going off about it. I have no idea what the fuck's going on. Like, what are you talking about? And then all of a sudden, A7X announced they're releasing an NFT project. I'm like, okay, hang on. Now I'm interested. What's going on here? And Joel got me educated.
Well, shout out
enough,
Joel.
Enough shout to out to be Joel. Able to sort out my own stuff and here we are, and I'm very fortunate.
It's been nothing but a great experience. I'm like so happy for you, like well done. And as we said, I got to keep saying this, just fuck, be careful in the space. It's rife with scams. It is the wild, wild, unregulated west.
I mean, but if you find the right place, there's a lot of helpful people as well. So
the SEC in America, and what I understand, is starting to crack down on like celebrities and stuff shilling crypto and shit like that. There's certain things you can and can't say now. Like you can't tell people to buy something, or there's certain ways they can go about influencing people. But even then, it's still the fucking Wild West. Do you know what I mean? So, right. So enough about crypto.
That's my story.
Congratulations, Chip.
I've got a Sinister Gates guitar. I've got two more to come.
Oh, you rub it in, Chip. Rub it in. It's free. Yeah, fucking great. Thanks.
You're never going to sell those either.
No.
Like, not to pay your kids, like, university tuition. Nope. Yeah, not to buy, like, your retirement house. Like, never. Nothing.
But before we do wrap that up, I remember a few days after you got it, you got an offer for, like, $12,000 to take it off of you.
Yeah, like, $12,000. Like, it was that as literally as I opened it, I'd already had offers on it. Like I had offers on it. Like I woke up that morning because the reveal came like overnight while I was sleeping. I got up to look at it and I'd already had like offers for thousands of dollars and I'm there going, what
don't
the hell's going
on? No matter what happens to you in life, don't sell that. Because you will go through it. You will go for the rest of your life going, I shouldn't have sold that guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Like you might, your hands might fucking fall off and you never play guitar again.
Mm.
But just having that piece of your own like this band that you love so much, like your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's it. It means too much.
And or like, just pick the shittest one out of the three and sell that.
Yeah.
There'll be someone that want to buy it from you.
Look, to be honest, and everyone can put a bit of pressure on Daniel for me, I'm hoping that one day he puts one up in my house. Thanks, bud. Appreciate that. Not your kids' room, not your spare room, my room.
Just take
start kissing my ass now.
Just take a full length like photocopy like image of the guitar, then go and buy a replica model and then just stick it on that, then give it to him.
Just get 3D printed. Here you go, mate.
Now, right, boys, Mattel. So right, it's a bit of a gateway song to the rest of their discography, isn't it? And eventually,
yeah, I think what so. They've kind of done. It's got a bit of everything in it. Yeah, it's got heavy elements. It's complex. It takes you on a bit of an emotional kind of journey lyrically and musically. It's I think it sums up A7X pretty well.
It does,
which is why I picked it.
It sums them up,
mm-hmm. And I also love the fucking song. So.
Do you think they are becoming like System of a Down?
That's a really question.
Not writing music.
Oh, fair enough. Their style of music. This album, the like erratic changes through genres. Is that a like a complete style change, or is it experimentation, or is it just freedom?
I don't think
it's
a deliberate move to be like, we want to be like System of a Down. We want to channel our
because that'd be the second time in their career they'd said that about a band, right? Mm.
Well,
did they not at one point say they went a bit too hard Metallica on the what's the one with the black album cover?
Hail to the King.
That's the one. Yeah. No, that's like a little tidbit that I read, so I'm just throwing a little bit in there.
Everyone's got their opinions on that. Yeah.
I thought, Daniel, that so when obviously they've been quite successful. All their albums basically have sold about 1 million copies, and that's enough to, I guess, give you some kind of financial freedom.
Unless
they
say 1 million copies in the digital era. Yeah. 1 million physical copies in the digital era. Yeah.
That's still
of each album.
That's very fucking impressive.
But all the way back to City of Evil, mate. Even probably before that.
How many albums have
Waking
they got?
Waking the Fallen. I think they
I think Waking the Fallen might have gone platinum.
How many albums do they have? Give me a timeline. So they've been around since what, 1999?
1999, first album was released in 2001, where they were basically a garage band. So sure. I almost don't count that. It's got some good tracks.
What, Sounding the Seventh Trumpet?
Sounding the Seventh Trumpet. They didn't have Sinister Gates on there except for the intro track. He literally wrote the intro track, and like they'd already recorded the whole album. Then Sinister Gates comes along and joins the band. He's like, right, I'll play with you guys. Does this shredding, tapping kind of solo to lead into the album. You think it's going to be some metal shred fest, and then it's just like thrash and punk. Still good, but like it's just not.
And then they moved into the album after that, which was Waking the Fallen.
Waking the Fallen.
And then had bangers like Unholy Confessions and
Second Heartbeat.
Surrounding Second Heartbeat.
I Won't See You Tonight.
Yep. And these are all songs that I got on my like guitar pro tablature kind of thing back in the day. And I was fuck, this shit is wild. Yeah. And then after that they had City of Evil. And what are some great songs off City of Evil?
They're all great. That's probably one of my favourite albums of all time.
It is. It's got Beast in the Harlot, which is obviously the song
Beast,
that's on guitar.
Beast in the Harlot, Beast in the Harlot's the one that a lot of people will know the band for because of Guitar Hero. Yes.
Right. That is one that I've I don't know many of these guys' songs, so I'm definitely the colour commentary on this episode, but that's one I've known for a while.
Yeah.
Is that there before I forget? As in,
no,
it's on Guitar Hero.
No. Is that like Avenged Sevenfold's Before I Forget? Like that was the one that everyone that didn't listen to them but had heard of them knew.
No, I'd say Unholy Confessions was because I couldn't find someone that hadn't heard Unholy Confessions through all.
I've never heard it. I only heard
Unholy Confessions.
Not that I can recall.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how was it for you? How was the first experience? Were you just like, fuck, that's sick?
No, not really.
Oh, what'd you say?
I can't remember it.
That riff, dude. Come on. Okay, there you go.
I'd know it if I heard it, but I just
heard it. Well, I'm glad you got that experience, but I'm sorry it wasn't as fucking dick hardening as it was for us.
Oh no, I know the song. Yeah. I just had to listen to the first 10 seconds of it. Sock and boppers. Cool. So like every band from like that's has been around that long sort of has that. I just call it Before I Forget because that's
the
there.
Equivalent.
It dominated commercially.
One that was commercially successful that everyone knows, even if you're not
song.
A real fan.
Like, yeah, it wasn't like a sellout track. It was very much just in the pocket.
And this is not quite. I think it got. I guess a lot of press because of Guitar Hero. Kind of like Through the Fire and the Flames.
That's fair. Yes.
But I would say, something like Unholy Confessions or Backcountry even.
Yeah, great.
I listened to that for the first time today. Never heard it.
Yeah, right. That was probably their breakthrough song.
It's the most popular song on Spotify from that record. It's got like 193 million plays or something ridiculous like that.
And it's that actually won an MTV Music Award, American MTV Music
Back
Award.
Back when MTV played was it music.
Yes, that's yeah. right.
How many millions of listens did you say it had on Spotify?
I think The Beast and the... Oh, no. Unholy Confessions or Backcountry had like 193 million.
Wow.
That's sounds, I remember 193. Right. So
because they have
it's
about,
a big number.
They have about, across all streaming platforms, about 6 million unique listeners a month, which is pretty cool. So they're...
Yeah, yeah.
Back to that financial security. And that's so we had City of Evil, and like you said, the great songs on there. Yeah, yeah. Back in My Day, I Tried and Learned MIA and stuff like that, Strength of the World.
City of Evil was the first album I properly listened to by them.
Got into that,
and a good old friend of ours introduced me to a song called Blinded in Chains.
Uh-huh.
And
we're not shouting your mate out or?
No, fuck him.
All right,
shout out to Chris. Thank you. He got me hooked on him from there. So,
and did you like Blinded in Chains when you first heard it not long ago?
The backstory for that one is I'm not an A7X fan, like I said. So Daniel, in the lead up to this episode, Daniel gave me I made a little homework playlist, and it was sort of the best of all of the albums.
A little mini discography.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like a little sort of tour through the ages, and it was good. Like you can definitely see their evolution from. That first one you sent me, I can't remember any of the fucking names, but that's got real hardcore sort of early metalcore feel.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then it sort of gets, like the recordings get a lot cleaner and stuff like that, and then it gets that more polished sound.
Yeah. They get more polished as musicians,
It felt like when you were tuning an old radio and you could... Oh. As you were tuning, getting closer to where you need, like, you know, those really old ones in your parents' car, like your mum's 94 Liberty, right, where it was just the little red... plastic thing that went all up and down, so you can never really tell what the frequency was, but you could see the number. And the closer you got to it, you could start to tune in. So how I feel about, you know, their albums, that little tour you sent me on, was where that first album, it was really fuzzy, and then through those albums it really started you're turning the tuner, it's getting closer and closer, and then sort of Hail to the King era or Beast in the Harlot era, they really hit that fucking really sort of nice mix between.
Yeah, they're polished.
Yeah, there was more polished sound, but not like poppy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think.
It's a large analogy.
City of Evil was their breakthrough. It was the one that kind of.
And that grabbed you as well. So you've been around since 2005 listening to them then?
Yep. 2005.
Then after that, we had the self-titled album, which had some fucking absolute bangers on it, like Almost Easy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Critical Acclaim. Afterlife.
Little Piece of Heaven. One of the best songs of all time. Yep. People need to hear that. Dear God. I mean, let's just.
Yeah. They got a country song. They put a country song on it.
Yeah.
A crunchy song.
A crunchy country song.
Oh, you said country.
A crunchy
song. I thought you said crunchy.
I think I kind of said a blend of the two. Yeah, I don't know what I said.
A crunchery.
We'll listen back to that later.
And then after their self-titled album, they moved into Nightmare, which is probably one of the best albums of all time.
With Mike Portnoy. Dream Theater. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, well, fuck, we're here. We might as well touch on that, mate. Why did Mike Portnoy have to come to the band in 2010 when they were doing so well in 2009?
So sadly, at the very end of 2009, the original drummer and founding member, The Rev, passed away unexpectedly, and you know, at the age of 28, extremely sad. And you know, the band were obviously, as they would be, contemplating their future at that point, not knowing what to do. They lost their brother, their best friend, and he was
quite a revered drummer at that point.
Yeah, wasn't he? Totally. A star. I'm not a drummer, as you know, Julian. I like to fuck around on the tubs, as you call them, now and then. Some of the stuff he was doing, even I was just like, wow, look at this guy go.
I think, you know, he's kind of the guy, you know, had he been around a bit longer, like he would have, like the impact he would have had, not to say he hasn't had a massive impact already, but the impact that he could have had and what he could have created, because he had such a unique
I've heard a few songs now.
Mm.
He was just fucking tight. He was tight. Oh, he's fast. Unreal. You know, not all over the place, just... covered all bases, you know what I mean? And this is from someone that doesn't really like this band that much, but again, just because you don't like a band doesn't mean you can't say that, like, whether or not they're good. He was just solid, you know what I mean? He reminded me a bit of Adrian Erlandson. Erlandson from At The Gates. Yeah, shout out Adrian Erlandson. From At The Gates.
Okay.
He's just, I don't know if you guys have heard them. His brother, Daniel Erlandson, drums for Arch Enemy.
Yeah.
So, it runs in the family, right?
There we go.
You know, that really, really aggressive, but like... you'd bet you'd put money on him to be that good live as well. Yeah. You know, there are drummers that sound good in the studio and they're shit live, and then there are drummers that just like, whatever, roll in and smash it live. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
He was there.
Yeah.
But even...
No, go on.
Even though they had Mike Portnoy, right, in this Nightmare album, Did he do some of this? He wrote some of the songs for Nightmare. Correct?
No, he didn't. He didn't write any of the songs. But he recorded the songs. The songs had basically all written.
Yep.
The Rev actually came up. Like, I think it was a day or two before he died, and this song, it was a completely like a piano composition. He'd written the lyrics for it, and he'd even like done some demo vocals for it.
Is this Fiction?
This is Fiction. Yeah, it was originally titled Death, and a couple of days later, sadly, he passed away. And they actually kept a sample of his vocals as part of the demo that he recorded.
Yeah, you can hear him screaming in the background. Very nice.
Yeah, they kept that in the album, and still to today, they do tributes at their live shows to him.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, because it wasn't just a band member or just a drummer. It was their brother.
Yeah. They had a very, very close knit.
Yeah, group. and it affected the fans too. Like the fans, you know, whether they. Well, you know, had ever met the guy or not, but still, like, it's
interesting what a fandom or a fan base, can do to a band as a culture as well.
Yeah.
You know, like some bands, like people just like them, you know what I mean? But other bands, it's like, it's this intense, all-consuming kind of family, mm-hmm. I guess.
Obsession? Yeah. Love, yeah, not, yeah.
I don't want to say obsession because that's got like a negative connotation to it. But I think what we've described thus far with these guys is there's this really intense sort of community.
Yeah, and it's not passionate.
Exactly right. And like it's all inclusive and it's this and it's that. And
yeah.
Look, I have a little bit of trivia about that record as well.
Yeah, bring it on.
Mike Portnoy, in an interview where he did a video where he was playing a lot of his favorite drum intros and some of his own, he talks about the intro to Welcome to the Family.
Yeah.
Where he actually says, and if you listen to it, it's pretty obvious, he says it's sort of like the start of Honor Thy Father by Dream Theater. Mm. Now, for you know people that know that song, they know that like the intro is just really popular. Like it's a really sort of well-known drum intro. And he said, I sort of did the same thing, but he said that when he had the Revs bit, he was just this sort of like big double strike on the double bass and the big snare hit by itself. So they said to him, can you think of something a bit more aggressive? So then he did that sort of like four on the hands, two on the feet, sort of round the toms, and then this big fucking snare slap to sort of like, I think it was sort of like to pay homage to the Rev, but he wanted to put something a bit more technical in front of it.
Yeah.
That's so good.
And you know, he just went, fuck it, I'll just do Honor Thy Father again because it's so good.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love the piece of cool. Trivia. So on that album, Daniel, unless there's anything you want to say about Nightmare, like I think to me, I think it's the peak of Avenged Sevenfold for me.
Yeah. You don't have to agree with that?
No, look,
everyone in the Discord doesn't have to agree with that. front to back, it is just one of the best albums.
The thing is, I think every fan's going to have their own favourite album by Avenged, and a lot of them will love Nightmare. And I think for me, it's the most emotionally driven album.
Emotionally driven,
and obviously a very dark album. They were going through a lot of pain at the time, and a lot of it was written before the Rev's passing. But there's still the themes that are associated with it. It's very, very dark, and then the way it's been produced and the way it's been composed, it takes you on a big emotional roller coaster. Yeah,
yeah, you don't put it on lightly.
And it's just so good. Like the guitar's amazing, the drums amazing, the vocals incredible. It's just like shout out Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah, great, you can feel you. And for me that's why it's been my favourite. Life is But a Dream might one day pip that, I don't know.
As
it
you
could
grow,
just be the hype, but yeah, you grow, you know, fans we grow, as musicians they grow, but to wrap up that album at the end with Save Me, oh my God.
You love it.
That's long probably my favourite song of all time.
Wow.
It's absolutely unbelievable. And yet the album's got a bit of everything on it, but that song is just an 11-minute epic and it's just got everything in it. Yeah. You know, some songs just get you right in the feels.
Yeah.
That's one of them.
The band could have almost, you know, closed curtains there, but they galvanized and then a few years later they released Hail to the King.
Yeah.
And Hail to the King for me was more rocky, kind of shreddy.
Yeah, and that was a deliberate move by them. They wanted to strip things back. They're kind of, in case people haven't gathered this already, they like to experiment and just try different sounds, try different things.
Yeah, so
they don't like to be stagnant. Like we could argue someone like Amity Affliction. Okay?
If you didn't say it, I was gonna.
Yeah, the Amity Affliction, and for every album bar one, they've pretty much had the same kind of formula, right?
It's fair to say that since Misery, they've started changing it a bit. They've got a different formula now.
A bit more aggressive now as
well.
But
from Youngbloods to This Could Be Heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where the divide of fans is. It's either do the same or do something different.
Yeah. We talk about this all the
time. Yeah, we talk all the time.
It's the Amity Parkway argument.
Yeah, that's right. And as much as I'd like to have another nightmare, sure, I would still love it. I'd still listen to it. But in all honesty, I'd much prefer to have something that's different and unique. Like, I was not – everything that's been released on Life is But a Dream, everything just caught me off guard.
Don't expect a band to release Horizons more than once.
Yes.
Don't cry when they don't do Horizons Part 2.
Now, you don't have to like it.
Yeah.
You don't have to like it.
Well, that's
if it
good because I don't like these guys at all.
So, on How to the King, we had, you know, obviously the title track, a banger. We had Shepherd of Fire. We had anything else that you liked on there? Because I got one I want to talk about.
Oh, well, I know what one you're going to talk about. I'm going to say. Oh, there's a few.
They're
really
all pretty good
ones.
Crimson Day. Crimson Day. This Means War, Doing Time.
Yeah.
Great songs.
They have a rock vibe to them, and it's a bit more sort of kind of, you know, Money Beat. They're deliberately embracing their influences. They're embracing their Metallica influence, their Iron Maiden influence, their Megadeth influence, all that. Heretic's probably one I really love off Hail to the King. I think it's just got a excellent melody to it.
It's great.
Julian's just casually playing the stage.
Just listening to it. There was a couple of things I wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
About this album in particular?
Just about the things that I had noticed about them as well. The next one's the stage, right? What's the album called? The Stage?
It's the Stage.
Before we talk about the stage,
Joel's got a little something he wants to say.
We're going to say at the end of this Hail to the King, we had Acid Rain.
Yeah.
Great song. And Daniel's actually covered it. He's done a cover of it. It's on YouTube.
Joel has also covered it. We covered it together. Believe it or not.
Well, shout out us.
Shout out Joel and
Go
Daniel.
Check it out. It's the worst video you'll ever fucking see. But
I don't know, man. Fucking Friday
by
Rebecca
Decently, it was decently mixed, though. We had my boss, who's, you know, quite experienced with mixing and producing. Shout out to Cam. And he got us into his studio and did it for free for us. And we spent good 5-6 hours like nutting it out. And
it was a great time. In the video, there's like the dirty blankets behind us and broken walls and shit like that.
Yeah, it was all beat up and... Yeah, so visually it's not very appealing, and I was getting excited. We just downloaded this new video editing software, and I was having a lot of fun with it, trying to like fade in different cuts and everything. And at the end, I had Joel and I doing like a choir kind of harmony. And
yeah, me that can't sing. Like I want to sing so badly, but I can't. You're like, yeah, fine, mate, do this bit.
I remember about you got to sing these notes, just these notes, and then he'd sing his, and then I'd sing mine over the top, and then we just like, yeah. Blending
so
together
basically,
in the clip.
You were dad and he's the kid trying to help cook dinner.
Yes. Oh, yes. I'm just like, you throw the plastic
him,
in the
pot. You let him shake the frying pan that had the sausages in it. Yeah. You're like, well done, mate. Look how well you're cooking them. Oh. Well done.
Joel, to be fair, Joel carried it with the guitar parts, though. I think I just played a few little sort of dubs here and there, basically, and some lead. But yeah, Joel played the chords. And it's a song that's got a lot of chords and it's very busy. And it took a while to
nail that one. Fuck, put a link to that in there, mate. That's good.
Yeah,
good shit.
On the topic of influences with these guys, so again, I've just done the best of the best world tour. So I can't say that I'm, you know, an aficionado on the ins and outs of all their albums, and I know their high points and their heavy points and their low points. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I felt was consistent throughout listening to their world tour that you made for me was. Like I said before, I don't know if I said this before we started recording or if I've said it thus far, but you can tell the guitarist, you can sort of tell where in history they grew up and who they were listening to when they grew up. And I thought like Iron Maiden, a lot of like metal bands from the 80s. And there's a lot of like
Pantera.
There's glamour elements to their look and their feel as well. One meme that I saw years ago that's just always stuck with me was it was a guitarist like on Instagram making a reference, and he was basically saying how to do his Avenged Sevenfold on easy mode, and it was just play like a riff, and then there's like he superimposed himself playing the same riff like an octave up.
Yeah. So doing a harmony.
Sure, yeah, you know what I mean? So these guys were early 40s, so they would have grown up listening to like, you know, like I said, Iron Maiden, Pantera, all that stuff, just through the 80s. But it wasn't just like only heavy, like, you know, not necessarily like Cannibal Corpse and stuff, but that sort of more technical guitar, but traditional heavy metal kind of feel. Yeah. And a lot of people, like when they think heavy metal, they think like, you know, Metallica. But that isn't necessarily what you could call traditional heavy metal. You could say that like Judas Priest.
Black Sabbath.
Exactly right. By today's standards, not fucking metal at all. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my colander in the kitchen's more metal than they are, but that's but that's what heavy metal, that was the engine room. That was the sort of melting point, you know, a pot, do you know what I mean?
And could you tell, like I know bit of a brief detour from the discography here. But could you tell their guitarist,
that's a leading
Sinister
question.
Gates, had a lot of jazz influences, and he's always been at like the highest level of guitar throughout the pieces?
Like I said, that's a leading question, but yeah.
Could you kind of feel that? Like some of the scales they use to me aren't as common throughout the whole genre. They're like, we'll just squeeze in.
At a cursory glance, it's evident that the guitarists know what they're doing and they're well-trained or well-versed.
Yeah. So it's an interesting blend.
It's not just... Yeah, you don't just say they know what they're doing, like as in they know how to play guitar.
Yeah.
They have a broad scope of influences and they know how to utilize those influences. It's amazing.
Yeah, and in recent years specifically, Sinister Gates has been going down the path of gypsy jazz, which is like a very chaotic, frenetic form of jazz. I don't know how to describe it, but it's just all over the place basically. Like my brain can barely comprehend it.
It seems like he sees something he can't do on the guitar and then goes, fucking watch me learn it.
Yeah.
And then adds it to the repertoire.
Yeah, well, something I want to mention later when we talk a bit more about Life is But a Dream. Sweet, learnt piano purely just to play on this album, and he's just sprinkled throughout all the tracks. But anyway, we'll get to that. Yeah. But anyway, where were we?
So we jumped into the stage. So you waited 3 or 4 long years.
Oh, can you remember
that? And the stage come out, and you're like, fuck yeah, it's finally
here. Do you remember that process, like that whole, like 3 days or whatever it was? I don't
know.
Two, 3 days. We were on Joel and I were driving... on a Friday night, driving to Sydney to see Bullet for My Valentine and Atreyu.
Fuck, from your house, that must have been like a 5-hour drive.
Yeah, back then, yeah.
It's a very niche
not with,
joke.
Not
isn't
with
it?
Joel driving.
Yeah. Though, so. No, I just meant to get from where you lived in Canberra to like north of Canberra.
Yeah, yeah, fuck. Yeah. So we went
and you were driving because I think I was meant to be on my phone working or something, but I was really just looking at memes on Facebook, and then. I see.
You don't get car sick when you look at your phone, do you?
Not really.
You're a piece of shit.
Wow.
Fuck you.
Bottle his blood.
Bro, if I even look at my phone, even when I'm riding shotgun with the aircon on and the window down, my brain's just like, nope, turns itself upside down.
Yeah.
Fucking hate. Ah, oh, fuck you, man. Anyway, continue. Yeah.
No, my partner has that too, and I'm just like, I don't get it. Like, if I like haven't eaten and I'm dehydrated as well, then maybe. But I think I'm just fucked then anyway.
I must
right?
be from so. Just poor stock then. Yeah, there you go.
We're driving to Sydney. I'm in the passenger seat, just scrolling on my phone, and I see Sinister Gates' dad, also known as Papa Gates or Brian Haynor Senior. What'd you say?
Sinister Fence.
Oh my god!
Not Bade.
Oh, and anyway, he posts like this sort of, I don't know, this cryptic like image, and it's hints towards A7X dropping an album the next day. Like no one knew anything about the album except the track, the stage had been released like about a month earlier. That's all we knew about it. We knew there was something coming within the first few months, but there'd been no promo for it whatsoever. There'd been no push for it. And lo and behold, it was true. So the next day after the concert, we're fanging back to get to JB Hi-Fi as quick as we fucking can. But I had to – I think it was a Thursday night. We'll come back on a Friday. I had to go teach some students afterwards. I said, Joel, you need to go to JB Hi-Fi for me and pick up a copy.
And being the legendary friend that I am,
and he did.
I assume I did.
Yeah. And, and we were living together at the time, which made it easier, by the way.
Yeah, shout out.
I mean, you could have come
out. Shout out to the Brig.
Yeah, Brig. And yeah, that kind of shot him in the foot because I feel like sales weren't as strong as they could have been.
I think they just don't care anymore.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying about having
they don't care about
6 million listeners a month. Well, fucking, you probably got a bit of financial security.
Care, they know everything is digital, and they know that that's where everything's kind of headed. And they don't like. Yes, they'll still promote their stuff for sure, but they're not going to be caught up on it. Like Hail to the King, they went all out and had friggin' helicopters flying their banners. Over Huntington Beach stuff like that.
That's where
and
they're from, isn't it?
Yeah.
Huntington Beach, yeah.
And so that made sense to do it there. And I think, but actually before the release of the stage, like that day, I went and saw Bullet for My Valentine. And then I remember the next morning seeing photos on social media on the Sydney Harbour Bridge of death bats like projected onto the Harbour Bridge.
Yeah.
So obviously they had connections in Sydney and they were like, we like walked past Sydney Harbour Bridge, didn't even fucking notice. Like,
no.
Like we're staying not far from it. Yeah, we're probably on the other side of it, actually. Yeah, but they still do like to promote, but they like to do kind of fun things.
When was the stage released?
2016.
Yeah, so I guess streaming services had definitely sort of started to take off by this point.
Yeah, at Hail to the King, it was 2013, and it was still that like half-half.
Yeah, band. I get you. Yeah.
Like Spotify, no bands. Spotify wasn't even out in 2013.
No bands these days,
I don't think,
realistically push their CDs.
Yeah.
Like they don't. It's all about the vinyl.
It's about the vinyl, and it's about the merch.
Yeah, vinyl and merch.
Like, and sales, like you're not going to get good sales unless you're fucking Taylor Swift. Like,
exactly.
That's just how it is.
And so on this stage album, obviously, it's another exploration of their skills, talent, and what they want to do. What are some of the songs that you loved off here?
Well, the stage, also one of my all-time favourites. That's the great guitar solo, which of the seven guitar solos in the fucking song.
Yeah, that's
their,
right.
Their guitar work in that entire album is fucking phenomenal. Like, it's probably one of my favourite guitar-driven albums of all time. In terms of, like, lead guitar, the degree of guitar solos that are in there, but also, like, the melodies that are encapsulated are just,
it's good.
Phenomenal. The stage is probably my favorite.
Just
gonna
say all of them. I'm gonna say
or exist.
Exist. Exist is like something else, isn't it, mate? Sometimes I'll just put it on. Like I've got a son now. I talk about it all the time. Some days in the car, if we've got a long drive, like here you go, champ. We're just gonna put Exist on.
Yeah.
And you listen to some guitar for fucking 15 minutes, and at the end, it's got
Neil deGrasse Tyson. Yeah.
Talking about space and all that. It's just like it's an experience. It's something else. Loved it. And I wish we would have given that to Julian. Like, here you go, mate. Give us 15 minutes of your fucking time listening to this shit. Not that it's shit, but
that,
it's like,
that would have been an ask.
Yeah, because like we were a bit rude. And then, you know, this is 2016 and that's great. They're on a high where everything's looking good, and then we go dark for 7 years. We have the fucking, the pandemic, I guess. We come out and then we get Le Bad. Le Bad album.
Le Bad. Yeah.
Yeah, Life is But a Dream. What happened there?
Well, what didn't happen there, mate? Everything fucking happened there.
I'm one of those people that they said, like, oh, some people are going to be surprised by this. I feel like I'm still surprised by this.
Yeah, I'm still surprised. I've listened to it, 30 times. Like,
I find it – I don't know that it was the case here, but I find it weird when people or bands or whatever bait out, it's a pre-defense to a response. So they'll say, oh, some people are going to find this weird. You know what I mean? So then people go, it's a shit album. And they go, oh, you just find it weird. Like, they call out –
I know what you mean. I don't think that's the case here. I think they very much just said, look, we're doing our thing and we don't care. Like, you're going to love it or you're going to hate it.
By this point, I've sort of got the impression they don't give a fuck.
Yeah. So they do what they like because they're
good on them.
They're artists.
Yeah.
They're artists. Yeah. And this album, I think, encapsulates that magnificently. It's a work of art. Like, you don't, whether you like it or not, there's nothing out there that's remotely close to this.
That isn't necessarily a good thing, but it doesn't make it a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly right. Like,
if they're being really avant-garde with it, it good on them. But it doesn't mean it's good. It doesn't also mean it's bad.
Yeah,
it's just they're trying something new. Like, they're doing what
appeals to them and what makes them feel creatively, I guess, satisfied and they're going to do whatever the hell they want to do.
Do you think this is a new era for them, and the next album will be 2030? Because that
I don't know if they'll do another album again.
They might not. They might just drop NFTs. I think
because their record deal with Warner is now done. They had seven records had to do with Warner, now done. All these years later, they try to get out of it, and I think they had to come to some sort of compromise with them.
Sure.
So now they've kind of hinted at, yes, they may or may not release another album, but they've also hinted at. They're really creatively buzzing at the moment.
Oh, that's cool. Well. Good to hear that.
I listened to an interview with M Shadows, and it was on a podcast hosted by, I can't remember what it's called, something.
The Punk Rock MBA?
No. I've listened to that one. He has been on that. It's got Joel Madden. Joel Madden hosts it.
The Good Charlotte podcast.
No. Artist Friendly or something like that. Okay. So it's got the word artist in it. But anyway, because A7X and Good Charlotte have collaborated in the past.
I was going to say, you could not get a more dichotomous example of a band sticking to their metal roots and a band selling out as hard and quick as possible as having M Shadows interviewed by Joel Madden.
Yeah, but they're just mates. They're part of the scene.
Yeah, sure. Good on them. Like, I don't care. Good Charlotte make heaps of money. Good for them. But do you know what I mean? Like, I just that sticks out like a sore thumb, hey?
Yeah.
We're doing this for the money? Or we're doing this because we like making fucking metal.
Well, look, Shad's...
Someone's going to be upset by that.
Oh, I'm upset by that. I want some money.
I think we're all a little upset by that. M Shadows was talking with Joel about the album and the creative process and how you know, because of how fresh this sound is, this album is, how inspired he's feeling right now. So it hints that maybe there might be some more material in the not so distant future, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be an album. And because they're now done with their deal, they want to kind of push everything to go like
Overdrive.
Web3. They want to kind of push the Web3 scene a little bit more and do things which will
allow
Web3 is like, you know, you think crypto.
Yeah, okay.
Basically, it's like,
he's got no idea.
Hey?
He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's just going off vibe alone. It's like crypto, Web3, bro. Yeah, it's like crypto.
I don't know exactly how to define it, but it's like a new...
Fuck, call him out more. Jesus. He's been waiting for this episode for three years. He's on cloud nine, and you shit on him from such a great height.
Because people are going to be like, these cunts don't know what they're talking about. I'm like, we've said that from the start.
All right. Web3 is a new age of internet, basically.
Okay.
Joel, you can give us an actual definition if you like. You're probably more...
There's no internet in your fucking house, mate. I can't.
Well, no, he's not wrong.
So he doesn't know either because
we'll
he can't look
at We'll have a break here and then you can edit it in. Thanks, Daniel. That's a great example of what Web3 is.
But anyway, point is now they're done with their label, they probably... They'll just do their own thing.
I'm hoping for some collabs.
Yeah, let's maybe. Let's do it. Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like...
They can run their own show now. Like they've made it. They don't need the money. They don't. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to speak about their finances, but I don't know if they're in it for the money or not. It could be a part of it.
Might be nice to have some money.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it's always nice, but
they didn't do a fucking rug pull with the NFTs. Yeah. So that kind of says that while they got some money for it, they weren't screaming for it because they're handing out a fair bit of fucking value as well.
That's right. But I think they just want to do their thing.
I think you get to a certain level of, you know, being a musician that's successful, or certainly the success as a musician, I should have said, where you're like a Diablo character. You're just like, you're only dealing with what's directly around you and you're just going in whatever direction you want. And then whatever's there, like, you know, if you come across something, you're like, oh, I want to be creative and do an album. I'm going to do an album. Or, okay, we're going to do shows. But he's just like, whatever, man, I'm going to do whatever I want. And if I want to release music, I'll release music. If I don't, I won't do that either. You know what I mean?
That was a very strange analogy, but it makes sense to make it
He's
right
now. He's
got
the strangest analogies, so, but they work.
Thanks, mate.
They always work.
We'll pay that. Yeah, mate. Did that just interrupt all the flow we had?
Oh. Never.
I can bring it back. Mattel. That's a song we are finally going to talk about. Yeah, we're going to talk about Mattel. So Mattel is obviously the kids' toy brand.
Yes.
Yeah, are they going to get in trouble for naming
their
song
Mattel? Yeah, and I was thinking that, and I was like, And I saw the track listing before the album got released. So I'm like, Mattel, what the hell? How are you going to make a song about Mattel? Like, is there another meaning for Mattel that I don't know about? And then
it kind of says a lot that an A7X fan looked at that and went, that's a bit weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're fully used to the, like, you're fully deep in the lore, and then still you're like, that's a
This isn't
one.
Related to death and skulls and hell and fire. How strange.
Yeah.
How are you going to talk about God and fire and demons with that on?
So this song, Mattel, mate, it's about how fake life is. Is that what's happening here?
I think so. I think in a nutshell, yes, it's how I think Mattel is like a metaphor, like the brand Mattel, like the plastic toys, the Barbies and all that sort of shit, and how superficial life is and how we kind of abide by societal norms and we kind of just, we're all just part of the machine, basically, I think is what it's alluding to.
Oh.
I'm happy for your input on that, but I think that's what they're getting at. It's not literally just talking about plastic toys, but if you listen to the lyrics closely, there are certain examples.
Yeah, it goes a bit deeper, but there's sort of there's the metaphor of, you know, saying my vinyl skin provides protection, it holds in place my plastic bones.
Mm.
Like I sort of said to you when you showed me this song the first time, I said I feel like there's a very, very strong but very separated double meaning there. It's sort of effective lyric writing because there's the surface layer and then there's a very distinct but separate second layer to it. They're not as connected, and I think there's definitely a skill in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're not sort of one and the same. So I think, but then it does get a bit deeper, and then it's got the Truman Show reference as well. So you can sort of tell that there's more than just like surface level thinking going on behind writing the lyrics. Because I mean, the Truman Show itself was that as a metaphor. It was a surface level thing and then something very deep going on underneath that as well.
Yeah.
So I just thought of that then. That's not bad.
And I like when he says, he's just smart enough to know nothing at all.
Yeah.
Because, obviously they're a band that is, you know, active on the internet, we can say, and on the internet you see people that say a lot of stuff, but they're clearly fucking
idiots.
Retarded. And especially for me, now that I try to study psychology, it's every day you're like, holy fuck, I don't know anything. but you try to act smart. I've got something after three years.
Well, there's a really cliche, but it's accurate. The old expression, the wisest man knows that he knows nothing. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's like in the same vein as you can never stop learning.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And this song, mate, how good is it? The contrast between it's like the chorus where he's singing in his most, you know, 2003 whiny, nasally kind of voice about the daisies. Yeah. And then he goes into the, you know, we'll find ourselves in hell. It's like, love that. Yeah. Great. That's, for whatever reason, like, it's just, it's, it seems very Avenged Sevenfold now that they would do that.
You know,
from like this slow pace to really fast.
Yeah. Contrast, like, I think that almost sums up the album. Like, it's wacky, it's all over the place, but there is a lot of contrast amongst like individual tracks.
Yep.
You think of even Game Over, the opening track, like it goes from like a kind of a Spanish sort of theme guitar into System of a Down. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
It's come back. System of a Down intensity. And it's just all over the place. And yeah, Mattel is another example of that coming from that very melodic chorus. I wouldn't say whiny, I'd say very melodic and soulful.
you touched the nerve there, Joel. Yeah. Please don't ban him from the Discord mods, please.
He was great in 2003, but he's a much better singer now, that's for sure. Yeah, he has a unique voice.
His son screams, though. They're mad.
He's got it.
Like, yeah, he's got the whole package.
Yeah.
Can you ask him to answer this one question? Can you say to him, mate, your voice is fucking incredible. Why did you sing like this on this album? Why not just sing like you did in Nightmare?
Voice has evolved, Joel.
Okay, very middle of the road answer there, Daniel.
He actually went through some vocal surgery a few years ago. I think 2018, 2019. They had to cancel a couple of tours because of that. And when you go through that sort of thing, you're going to have to adjust to sing with a different technique so you don't 100%. Fuck it up again.
See, I don't know that now. Yeah. Great. Now I look like a fucking asshole. That's fine. I love what they've done. Anyway, you know, Easier is probably my favorite song of the album, by the way. And Easier and G.
You like Easier, do you?
Yeah. Because they've got like, obviously Easier's got the cool little, you know, the chord strumming, right? Or is that the
dark? Oh, it's like, yeah, almost like Red Hot Chili Peppers style at the end there, isn't it? Yeah, it's cool.
Is G the song that sounds very much electronic?
No, that's Ordinary. Ordinary. Ordinary, yes. O in the bracket.
So obviously the song G and the song Ordinary and the song Death all go together. And the start of their, like the start of the, what's the fucking first letter? Spells God. However you say that in a not dumb way. Those songs all roll together. You know, the song Ordinary and Death. Yeah, the song G, the song Ordinary and the song Death. They're one song, right? They're one song split into three. Basically, it's great. Love that. I love all that. Like those, they're great songs. I can't believe I'm saying that, bro. I can't believe I'm saying that to you about this album. They are great songs.
There you go. I wouldn't have thought that.
No, they're good. Yeah. But
I would have thought you would have been more into, like, well, Mattel. But
no, don't even like Mattel.
And Cosmic, mate. What kind of relationship do you have with that song?
Oh man,
it's a bit long.
Well, it's A7X, man. It's like standard 7 minutes. That's normal for A7X. What are you talking about?
It's like I was saying earlier. They're very much that traditional metal band. Mm. So you look at. Even the stuff you send me, it's 4 to 5.5 minute songs, standard.
Yeah.
So like adding an extra minute and a half along. Yeah. I listened to that song today because it was the only one I hadn't listened to from your little list. And I was admittedly working at the time, but it felt like it went for about a month. And I stopped at one point, about 5 minutes. I was like, the fuck is going on here? The fuck am I listening to? Like, it's just fucking weird, man.
It is a strange song, and it got me the first time I listened to it, I was right here, and you know, part of the perks of being in the Sinister Gates school, he came online, he said, we're playing the album a day early, come online.
Oh, man.
And we got to listen to it like the day before it got released, and sitting there at the desk and had it plugged in, he was streaming it, he was chatting to everyone, and it was everyone was having a great
time.
That's
an experience.
Was he talking and you like shut up and trying to listen?
No, he was...
Oh, wow. He was typing, yeah. Mate, fan service.
Yeah.
Because how much does that piss you off? He's like, I'm going to talk to you. And you're like, shut the fuck up. I love, you're great and this music is great. The two need to be mutually exclusive at this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was great. We got some insight on a lot of the songs and everything.
Oh, that's
it was
really awesome. Cool.
Insight on Mattel that I'll get back to in a minute.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Can't wait.
But yeah, I got to Cosmic and it's. In the terms of the track listing, it comes just after We Love You, which is another very chaotic song. And it's almost like five songs in one, you could say. Mm. Like, you know, it starts off as like, what's that? Mr. Bungle? You know, Mr. Bungle from the Knives. It starts off with that kind of scene. And then it gets into a bit more of a a dance kind of like European dance remix song, and then it just breaks like, into thrash, and then it comes back to the dance, then more thrash, and then like
you're like, I didn't know Electric Callboy was on this record.
Well, it was just strange when it first came out. I'm like, what the fuck's going on here? But it was cool, and then it finishes with a very like a almost like 2 minute outro, very mellow, slowed down slide guitar part, and it's just you know, kind of, and you listen to it, you kind of picture yourself like, you know, sailing, like rowing down a river or something like that, you know. It's just like very, very peaceful.
Is this Cosmic you're talking about?
No, this is the lead up to Cosmic. This is Love You. So lead into that, and so that's leading into Cosmic. You're going, it's like, you know, you're rowing down a river or rowing down a stream or whatever.
And they are connected? They're sort of two songs?
Yeah, well, they're not, I don't think they're directly connected, but they work so well together.
Yeah, okay.
And then it breaks into Cosmic, which is just... And I didn't know what to expect for it. I'm like, I saw the title, I'm like, oh, Cosmic, okay. And it comes in with like this church organ, and then M Shadow's getting back into his beautiful soulful voice again, not whiny, soulful Rich. Voice, yes. And I don't know. By the end of it, I just didn't know what I was feeling, you know.
What were you feeling?
I didn't know.
You didn't know.
I didn't know. I hadn't felt anything like that before. It's honestly like the song activated a part of my brain that I'd never used before.
Yeah.
And I'm there going, what? And it was like a little overwhelming at first, but then at the end of the song, when the drums kick back in and it gets up to another gear again, like it just sort of released and I was like tearing up, man.
Kind of like post-night clarity going on. Mm. Yeah.
All right. I was going to ask with Cosmic, because, you know, you've said it, you've just given us, it's quite the experience. Off the top of your head, can you think of any other songs? You made me think of something. Any other songs that do that? Like there's songs that fucking slap and they got lyrics and music and it fucking goes hard. And then there are songs every so often that it takes you on a bit of a journey and it's sort of, you know, it's not like you're fucking a DMT trip or an acid trip or something, but it becomes more than just a song you're listening to and then you sort of snap out of it. You're like, oh. But it's not every time you listen to it, but it's those few times where you're sort of by yourself maybe or just in the car in your own sort of world and it just takes you on like a bit of a journey.
Oh, totally. But to think of it right now, I mean, because Cosmic's still so fresh.
Yeah.
And I'm still feeling it when I listen to it. I'd have to dig deep to find that.
Yeah.
But for sure, I know what you mean.
I can think of one.
Well, like songs that put you into the flow state.
I don't know what flow state is, but yeah.
Okay, cool. What's the song?
The self-titled track from Iowa by Slipknot.
Yeah. What, were you just rolling around the ground screaming?
15-minute epic, yeah, because it has that really slow build-up and then it goes into this is like a song bit, and then it goes into this really sort of hypnotic to and fro bit for a good 5, 6, 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the build-up's 2, 3 minutes as well. So it's like two long sort of dream state sections with small parts of band. In the middle. I remember the first time I heard it, I was in college. I put on my Sennheiser 302s.
Right.
Fuck, yeah, mad, right? 15-meter cable on them too, get around them. And I was just sitting by myself in the theater room and I just put it on. And I remember nearly falling asleep to it. It was that sort of like, I can't think of the word, but it was sort of like I was in a trance.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like everything you just described before, that was the first thing I thought of. And it's very infrequent that you'll get music that does that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So I think that's sort of really unique as well.
That's right. And so, I think the first time you listen to it is when it's most impactful.
That's right.
When you don't know what to expect. But like
every time thereafter, it's still good, but it will never be as good as that first.
But just every now and then, like a certain part of it, can like trigger that again, just to like not to the same extent, but just enough to remind you of what you felt at that time, and then it can, you know,
yeah,
it can get you again. But
your move, pop music.
Yeah. How are we going to get an emotional connection to a pop song? So, Mattel, what's the
I just love how when you say something serious, it still sounds fucking dry and sarcastic.
So Mattel. Anyway, so we're on this. This chat with Sinister Gates, and there was, you know, the hundreds of us, so I couldn't actually talk to him directly, but it was just a great experience nonetheless. And even just chatting to like other fans and stuff and comparing notes as you go, and
it almost becomes not a paranormal relationship, doesn't it?
Yeah,
almost.
That's right. Yeah,
parasocial.
Yeah.
Sorry, parasocial. When I say paranormal,
yeah,
parasocial was the word I was looking for. Yeah, thank you.
That's right. paranormal. Yeah. I feel like that made sense too, though.
Nah, paranormal's the wrong word. Parasocial was what I was trying to think of. I play games with a person that streams.
Yeah.
And they've explained to – they were the first person I ever heard explain the concept of a parasocial relationship. And I'd never thought about it before. But once you think about it from, like, the streamer's perspective, it's a really fucking wild concept. But I'm just saying this very, like, small community, you would start to feel like you're transcending that parasocial relationship to a degree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say that it's – no, I was going to say you're not, because, like, this guy doesn't know you at all, but then all these experiences, perhaps you have transcended that. Mm. Anyway, what's the cool little tidbit?
So we got to listening to Mattel, and Sinister Gates mentioned in one of his little messages that this was almost – it was very close to being the lead single for the album, For Life Is But a Dream. So for those who don't know, and Julian, I don't even know if you heard the track. You probably didn't, because it wasn't on my list.
No, I put a video in the Discord about it, remember?
No.
It was me putting my headphones on it for about
10. Right.
Yep.
I don't know if you actually listened to it, you're just memeing.
No, I had it on. No, when I pressed the play button on my keyboard, it legitimately played the song. Yeah.
What did I say? I said Joel didn't grab Joel. Joel didn't like it, seconds.
So I just went full sheep and believed what he thought. Yeah.
And that was obviously game over.
No, this was Nobody. I'm talking about the lead singles, like the lead singles, the first single that gets released from the album. Maybe, Nobody. So
like
Nobody.
Like the lead single.
Yeah, Nobody was ultimately it was track. Nobody that got that was released as the first track.
Yep.
But Mattel was almost going to
okay.
Normally I'd say that's a brave choice, but these guys don't give a fuck about anything, so it wouldn't have mattered.
And I think they went with Nobody because I think it's a – it feels a bit more central within the context of the album.
Yeah.
Mattel, like, I think it's a fucking awesome song, but I think it's quite all over the place. And, yeah, I don't know. I think it's certainly a standout on the album for me, or one of the better – I'm contradicting myself now. I said nothing really stands out on the album. I think it's a great fucking track, but, yeah, I think Nobody – was the right call because
would you have said the same thing if they put Mattel out?
Thematically. Sorry?
Would you have said the same thing if they put Mattel out?
No.
I find that hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily say hang it wrong, but I find it a weird concept that people say this was the right one for the single. But they have no way to know.
I don't think it would have mattered too much what they released.
You have no way of knowing what you would have felt had another song been a single.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's true. It's true. You don't know unless, like, they would have felt differently if they had.
Like, you would have to erase the song from your brain, and then have another one come out.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm not trying to jam you up. I've always found that to be an interesting concept because I myself as well think, fuck yeah, that was a mad choice for a single, and then I think, yeah, but so would any of the other songs.
Yeah,
like there, and you've just sat here and gone, these songs are all fucking slap. Like they could have put out Cosmic as a lead single, and
that would have been interesting.
That's probably pushing it. But do you know what I mean? They could have put out any of the more.
Oh, now I get you. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I think that no matter what they put out, everyone would have been like, "What the fuck is going on?" Because every song's like, "What the fuck is going on?"
Yeah.
So
the reaction would have been universal in that capacity.
You know what would have been the biggest "What the fuck is going on" is if they released the title track, "Life Is But a Dream," which is literally like 5 minutes of Sinister Gates playing piano, and it's fucking beautiful. Like it's very, very well composed, and he's a freak, man. Like he spent like 3 or 4 years learning piano and has essentially mastered it to the point where he just, what's the equivalent of shredding on piano? I don't know. He goes fucking nuts. And it's this beautiful, melodic, chaotic piece, this instrumental piece, and it closes the album. But imagine, my point is, what if they had decided just to throw that out as like the lead single for the
everyone,
everyone
would have been
so
like,
off,
the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
It would be like, when does the music start?
It would have left all you like rusted old fans just like itching for more.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Oh, totally.
I reckon it would have been more effective there because it would have essentially, like Joel said, would have just been massive cocktails for you guys.
Yeah. Just to change gears real quick, guys. Obviously, earlier we did the scratch it to show what an NFT is like. I've got 2 more scratch its. So I'm just going to quickly do one to show you what an NFT is like. This is a $1 scratch it, guys. I'm going to scratch it now. I'm minting it. I'm basically minting this fucking scratch it here. It's an NFT. And so it cost me $1. And I'll tell you how much return I got on it. Zero. Yeah, that's doing
anything.
You
got another one though, mate.
There's one more here. Okay, we'll do that one too. Just reinforcing about buying NFTs and just generally buying shit online. Here we go. This is it. So we've bought 5 today, guys. So we spent $5 on NFTs basically. And I'm just minting this one, this last one here. And we'll just have another look here. And nope, no utility, no value, nothing. So I've just, nothing but, I've just wasted all my money, all my Ethereums. So that's what NFTs.
Been rugged, like. Mate.
Yeah, I got, it's got rugged by the Scratchy company. So Mattel.
CoffeeZilla, I'll make a video on you soon.
Now, anything else we want to say on Mattel specifically? Like, I've got lots to say, but anything else you want to discuss?
You know what, mate? I'm just going to sit back and you just say everything you want to say. No, go nuts.
Or is there anything that stands out for you guys?
Yes, the very whiny chorus.
The very whiny chorus, yeah. It is
which when you think about what the song is about how it is, the soulful chorus, yes, Daniel. It fits in the context. Like, I can imagine him, he's a Ken doll and he's trying to sing these words.
Yeah.
You know? That's how I see it now.
Yeah, true. And it's wordplay.
It is. Or,
I think wordplay is the term that we use when I was doing singing lessons. Currently, wordplay or word painting or something like that. It's where it's the way you pronounce certain words or the way you use certain words to paint a picture, basically. Yeah. Like, you know, if you're trapped, then, you know, you might have a constricted sort of voice. Or if you're breaking free, you might, your voice will break free and it'll be louder and it'll be more pronounced. And I think there could be a deliberate choice by them. Yeah.
There you go.
Or it could just be M Shadow's amazing voice and just how it is. Who knows? Anyway, Julian, any standouts for you?
I was just thinking
he was just staring into my soul. So I'm going to look over this way now.
Yeah. He does that, doesn't he? He's got that real, like, dead eyed look, doesn't he?
And I was like, give me more. I have questions I was going to ask you, but it's like, I was like, give me more. I was going to say,
Well, no. Bank him. Would love to answer your questions for sure.
I was just trying to think of something mean to say.
Well, you can just stare at me. Apparently, that gets
no, because it's my job just to shit on everything you like. No, I think I don't know. Definitely the chorus stands out for me. Mm-hmm. Don't like it at all. Mm-hmm. Can't stand. That doesn't. Okay.
Doesn't you don't sound, like the chorus?
Doesn't sound good to my ears. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to get fucking banned.
That's cool. I wasn't expecting this to sound good to you at all.
No. I know that, and I'm not. The older I get, like I always say, I try to be more critical practically.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound good. Like, the whole song does not sound appealing to my ears at all, mm-hmm. except the bit that sounds like every fucking song they write that I've heard. And I talk
bridge.
To you about, No. Oh, there's like the fucking, it's Brooks Wackerman, isn't it?
Yeah,
he's their drummer. I actually knew of him beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny that's not a stage name, hey?
Really fucking talented. What is it? Like fucking like Death Silo or something?
No, like he doesn't need one because he's a drummer and his name's Wackerman. Like he's just made for it. Like my old bass player was called Boomer.
Was he in his late 50s and he complained about
late 40s, early 50s.
Well, in niche Australia, like that.
Sensational bass player. Shout out to Boomer. Yeah, but shout out to Boomer. Sometimes people are just made to be something.
Like, sure.
Wackerman comes in. It's a family of drummers. Like, they're all fucking drummers and musicians, but like largely.
It's like the Weinberg
drummers.
Family.
Yeah.
Very solid drummers. The bit that they do that sounds like every other Avenged Sevenfold song I've heard. So it's that really fast tremolo picking. Ask me if I know what tremolo picking is.
Do you know what
tremolo
is?
That James Hetfield can't do.
It's just as funny the second time. I forgot about that.
I've wanted to make that gag again for a while. So it's in The Beast in the Harlot. Is it Beast in the Harlot or
Beast
The
Harlot.
Beast in the Harlot?
Beast in the Harlot.
Because I fucking hate it when people call it Through the Fire and the Flames.
Yeah.
Even though I think Dragon Force sucks, I'm like, say the song right or don't fucking say it at all. Anyway, random hill to die on, but... The Beast in the Harlot, there's that bit, he does the double bass comes in and then there's a fucking that bit.
Yep.
And then there's the snare roll and it sort of builds, he's like, raw, and then that really fast money beat, the really intense in the pocket money beat and the tremolo beat again. I found that to be a very consistent element in
totally,
one form or another across everything I've heard of theirs, but I don't think it's bad. It is like, it is to them what like blast beats are to a deathcore beat.
Yeah.
They can use them in every song, and it just still sounds fucking mad.
Well, I think it's part of their sound. I think, but I think, and the reason why they do it in such a way is because you need to allow other components to breathe
a little bit.
And because if you just double kick all the way through, like it's going to overpower the song.
No, I'm not even talking about the
song.
Double bass.
I'm saying if you were to be double kick all the way through, like it's just gonna people are gonna be. Thinking this is a fucking crazy
Beast in the Harlot,
song,
right?
Isn't it?
That will get overstimulated.
That song's fucking great until it gets to the chorus.
Yeah.
It's fucking sick.
It's very pumps, poppy
it
chorus.
It goes very hard. And it goes into this weird thing on the drums and the tapping and the...
She's a dwelling place for demons.
Like, just the... That's
Avenged Sevenfold don't even like playing that.
No, well, okay, there you go. But like that whiniest, I don't use whiny because it sounds insulting, but I also don't care.
It's nasally
style of vocals that Joel's pointed out. For me, that's an instant fucking soft on. Do you know what I mean? But the other element of them smashes. Like that bit in the stage that I was going to mention, there's that fluttering double bass section.
In a song.
Yeah, at the start.
The stage, yeah.
And he's just playing it without the cymbals and the snare and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
As Brooks a drummer, that groove is really fun to play. It sounds complicated. It's really not.
Yeah.
And I've actually played that. I had a similar groove in a song that I wrote for a band years ago. And, you know, that just that really, they've got big pockets of intensity and then big pockets of like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So,
contrast, maybe.
Yeah, it's very, very contrasting. So that's, I guess, my take for Mattel.
Yeah.
Like, most of it, part of it, yeah.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to discuss was the bridge. We'll start with this is after the second chorus.
For those musically non-inclined, like drummers, which part's the bridge?
Bridge usually fits after a second chorus. It's usually a part of a song that's like quite kind of different to the rest and builds up to the climax of the song. Like it's, in this particular case, like can you give me the lyrics? Yeah, often it can be a breakdown or a guitar solo.
What are you clicking your fingers at him? You there.
Lyrics.
lyrics, boy. Bring me the lyrics.
Pull that up.
I've got the melody stuck in my head, but I can't get
which it. Which one? So Rounded after Consumed with Major Nothings.
After the second chorus. Plastic?
Living Fain in Porcelain and Just Smart Enough to Know Nothing at All. Pull My String and Make Me Cry. Advertisement Moral Scrawl.
Yeah. Yeah, that part there. But
cool.
So the bridge is usually something that helps you, bring you back towards the end of the song and like... I know I can't really find a great way to describe it in layman's terms.
Well, actually,
lot of songs have a bridge. Most songs have a bridge, and it's usually just very distinct.
Yeah, sure. I'd probably know it now.
Typically a song will go verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, finish. Like that's your typical rock song or pop song structure, and not many songs deviate too drastically from that. Even the more
like
extreme
we said before,
genres.
People like familiarity.
Yeah,
that's right. It's expected.
Yeah,
they do. Well, actually, dude, to just break away again. Last week, you told us what a breakdown was. I'll figure it out. And you said like one of the first breakdowns was actually going to be by Pantera.
I thought they were more of but they would have been the pioneers of the breakdown.
Yeah, well, we weren't really specific on like what a breakdown is.
Yes.
A metal breakdown is one thing, and then a breakdown is another thing. Yeah. A breakdown is like meant to be a lower energy section of a piece where the various instruments may have like solo parts, and the reduction is to create dramatic effect, kind of like a bridge.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And then obviously the breakdown evolved, have a metal breakdown, and here we are back at Mattel.
Yeah, back at Mattel. So it kicks in with this guitar tone I never heard before. You'd almost think it's like a synth or something. Like you know what part I'm talking about? It's like it's really like just a really
that's the
crazy
final countdown.
Tone.
I know that song.
It's a really crazy tone. That's all guitar work. That's all Sinister Gates and his fucking wild experimentation.
Okay, we get it. Sinister Gates is good.
Yeah.
Like
oh mate, how many times have you told me?
I'm just busting your balls.
I'm only halfway there, man.
Yeah. I think we get by this point in the episode, it is fair to say that Sinister Gates is the better of the two guitarists. Because you haven't mentioned the other guy
Zachy
once.
Vengeance.
Yet.
Zachy V. Yeah. Shout out to Zachy V.
Shout out
to
Zachy V.
He does his job. He does his job.
He does
and
his
he's
job.
A sensational guitarist.
Is he the rhythm
But to
guitarist?
Be fair, he's the rhythm guitarist. And anyone who's going to be in a band with Sinister Gates, you're always going to be the second
You need job doers in a band sometimes. You need someone to just play their role.
And he does his role. And as is Johnny Christ on bass, sensational bass player in his own right. But, he plays some awesome bass lines. Does he get the recognition? Do his bass lines stand out in the song? Not really, but it's all just part of the role, and that's often what it is with rhythm. And
he's like the fucking he's like the all the guys in the Chicago Bulls that weren't Rodman, Jordan, and Pippen.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You know what I mean? Like the Judd Bushlers and the Tony Kukoc. Mm-hmm. Oh, Tony Kukoc is pretty good in his own right, but you know, I mean, those role players.
Yeah,
yeah, like they you need a solid role player. If you had a shit bass player, you know, like Sid Vicious or something, fuck that guy. I don't know why I'm hating him for all of a sudden. They used to unplug him; he was that bad live. But you need fuck. That's a 4 out of 5 4-star maybe. You need those solid role fillers that match the personality, that match the energy, that match the stage presence, that you don't have to fucking get a pro in to re-record their bass parts and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Like, that helps.
Totally. And having Zaki has more of a punk influence. And it was him and M Shadows that really started the band, really kind of, they were the driving force behind it in the early days. And so you have Zaki's punk rock influence and then Sinister Gates coming in with his whatever the hell he was playing at the time. And him and the Rev were both agreed, because Sinister Gates and the Rev were like best friends in high school. And they knew Zaki and Matt and but they were just like, look, we love you, but we're not going to be in a band with you because you're not good enough, kind of thing. And is what they
to
M Shadows and Zaki Vengeance. But then Zaki and Matt had the drive. They kept going, kept getting better and better.
Yeah.
And you know, and they realized, oh, Matt can fucking sing, and Zaki can play. And then the Rev got on board, and then eventually Sinister Gates came on board. And then Johnny Christ came in the next album. But now it's very much, creative standouts within the band are M Shadow, Sinister Gates, and Brooks Wackerman. And I think they've come to a new chapter in their musical careers and as a band since the introduction of Brooks. I think he brings a whole nother element creatively into the group, and that's why we're seeing so many fucking wacky things. Like, The Stage was a crazy album too. Like, it was pretty nuts, but this is nuts in a different way. And coming to that bridge, Sin's crazy guitar solo with sounds tones I've never heard before. But Brooks's drumming, I just wanted to touch on that drumming in that particular part. Like, it's just how fast he's moving with his feet whilst keeping it all nice and tight, of course. But you can hear it. It's not overpowering. Like, it's very crisp bass drum tone, and you can still hear it. And it's still impactful, but it's not overpowering. And he's going, it's like 30 second notes. And it's like 30, I think he's playing like 30 second notes or something, or 16th note triplets. Like, just crazy, crazy fast. And then he just is alternating between that and then like this syncopated kick.
How that groove works generally, it's the 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4. So that's just right, left, right. And then you delay the left a fraction of a second. It's really simple. But then, you know, you play them, the quicker you play them, the faster they sound. But it's literally just like at a basic pattern. It's Bleed by Meshuggah. It's right, left, you know, and that's...
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
Can we get some confirmation from your mate on that in the Discord? Just ask one of the band members, hey, listen to the podcast.
That bit that goes like that. That's how you generally play. Like, he might be fast enough that he plays most with his right foot, but it's a feel that... It gets more and more hectic as it goes on, but it's a feel that sounds complicated, but it's not. But it's not easy to do, if that makes sense.
At that pace,
yeah.
To
hit it, to use a phrase, Joel, but like, hit it at pace, that's difficult, and to be consistent with it, because you one stroke out of place and the whole thing sort of falls over.
Yeah.
So
yeah, as is totally. The case with drumming. And look, it's not really that like Meshuggah likes. Kind of spurts, like you were saying, almost as a Vinnie Paul-esque, but it is quite continuous, but it goes from just like I'll even just, you know, I'll tap it out here for you, but it's like it comes from this really intense double kick, and then
I'm gonna laugh if your mic didn't pick any of that up.
Otherwise, it's gonna hear silence. But it'll be on I'm pretty sure we had that on the
just
sample
turn it up
anyway,
really
right?
loud. Yeah,
that, I think that's the part that that part. Came through in the sample anyway, so we can refer back
Mattel.
To that.
I kept thinking we were talking about The Stage.
No, we're talking about Mattel.
Oh,
now.
Fuck. No, he's like
that's
playing...
an awkward.
That's really
we got off that a while ago.
No, I thought talking about The Stage, sorry.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Okay, that just sounds like really fast on a really, really tightly closed hi-hat.
Yeah, at the start, there's a lot of hi-hat, and he deviates away from that, and the kick takes over. But
people be listening to this going, what the fuck is this guy describing? It's not like
that's
Mattel at all.
Yeah. I was like, what part of the song?
I thought he was still talking about The Stage,
Fucking, Julian, catch up, bro.
Yeah, well, okay, well, I've redeemed myself. But it sounds like he's really putting his fucking foot into closing that hi-hat pedal, like clamping him really tightly shut.
Yeah.
It could be something else, but that's, to my ears, what it sounds like.
And I thought you might appreciate... As a drummer, you might appreciate what goes into that.
That part after the chorus where it comes in a bit heavier and he's playing that really like slow but sort of pounding groove, I got real fucking, what's it called? It's a Deftones song. My Own Summer. Or Shove It.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Shove It. You know, like the drummer sits, it's got that really, really tightly tuned snare and you can really hear the hi-hats and stuff, and he just sits right back in the pocket and it's really impacting, but it's really, really like intense as well.
Mm.
So I really got a sort of similar feel to that. So
you're right.
Again, like the guy's great. Can you stop making fun of me?
Like, yeah, mate, I'll see you in the pocket.
Yeah. Seeing the pocket losers. Joel's making fun of me because I took my glasses off while I was
saying
that?
About the drums there? No, you're good, mate. Keep up. Is that
I'm done, talking about all the music. I'm good. We've touched many elements.
We have touched many elements.
Carbon.
Is that a joke really that you guys have that I'm not privy to?
Really starting to lose our legs here.
Yeah.
Boys, we've never done a podcast this long.
Let me try and get us all back on track here, mate.
The number of times one of us, is usually me, has talked over or under someone at the same time and we've both stopped.
Yes.
Starting to lose our groove.
Make some dead air. That's all right. Mate, what else do you want to touch on about this song to sell it to the people that haven't heard it that need to go on the journey of A7X? Anything at all?
Well, look, the people, our very large audience here at the Bangers List,
shout out the audience at the Bangers List.
Yeah, I'm absolutely inundated with messages of songs we need to hear.
All 16 of you, yep. I feel that they are very much into heavier songs, obviously. And that's kind of the whole point of this podcast, the whole point of the Bangers List was to share heavy songs with each other.
It's not called the music list.
No, that's right. It's about the pop list. But I still class this song as heavy. Okay. And if someone that's maybe not familiar with A7X, I think it's a good way to, it's a kind of good step in between and a good way to kind of get out of your comfort zone a little bit. And I have A7X to thank for that. Like I'd still be listening to AC/DC and Guns N' Roses on repeat if I didn't get into Avenge
A7X is kind of like a natural spiritual successor to Guns N' Roses.
Well, they kind of are, in a way.
Like in an alternate universe, Guns N' Roses died in a fucking plane crash and were reincarnated as A7X.
Yeah.
Yep. They're actually talented the second time round.
So you're saying we need to get like M Shadows doing like the November Rain solo, but like it's him instead of Slash?
Why is M Shadows?
Oh no! Fuck. Sinister Gates. Fuck. Can you edit that? Obviously,
nope,
obviously,
I'm leaving that in.
Well, fine. Let's get the singer to do a solo in the style of the November Rain solo by Slash, but
he can probably do it with his voice box. He's pretty talented.
Yeah.
Jeez, we've been going so long, even my brain's not working.
Yeah.
So I might have been working from the start.
Yeah.
It's all good.
But anyway, I think, you know, Mattel is a kind of good in between. If you're on the fence about A7X, it's something to listen to maybe broaden your tastes a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
And I think it's good to do because as metalheads, we can get very much stuck in a very
distinct genre. We really, really can, can't we, mate? Yeah. You that has a fucking niche and it's like you can't go outside of it very much. Yes.
Anyway,
picking on Julian now. This song for me, this song and this album for me was honestly like jumping into a fucking river of freezing cold water. Did you feel similar? Like, oh, this is so far outside of my comfort zone. Oh, it was a bit like that. Oh, for the songs you heard, I've obviously listened to the whole album
for the world
times.
Tour. Yeah, absolutely.
It is.
Like, none of it appeals to me.
Mm.
Like, I don't think it's bad. I just, nothing there appeals to me.
Yeah.
They're a gateway heavy metal band that set up their own city between where you are coming from and where you're going.
Mm.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Okay. And people stay.
That's my point, right? They're not just a I don't want to say they're a gateway band, but they are. But they have they did their own thing, and people stopped there as well.
Yeah,
it wasn't just okay. I'm gonna, you know, listen to these bands, but then I'll get into something heavier. It was I like this, and I like other things too. So they very captured that market very well.
Well, let's roll this turd in glitter and really make it shine. The bangs.
The bangs. How long do you want to say that one for?
So obviously it's the Bangers List for bangs, and obviously bangs is like B plus or minus the square root of breakdowns times bangs into bridges, and that's how you get the number for bangs.
I've just checked the formula.
That's the formula.
That's accurate. Okay.
And we decided to share it on this episode. That's how we come to the numbers. So let's talk about the numbers.
It's all maths.
We'll let Julian go first. I think it's very important he goes first because
get the shittest score out of the way.
this is a throwaway score.
Final comments on the song, mate. How many bangs out of 10 do you give Mattel by Avenged Sevenfold, the gateway song?
Nothing I haven't already said in my uneducated lack of knowledge on A7X. 6.5.
Fuck, that's generous.
That was better than I thought you were going to get.
I'll give 7 for musicianship.
7?
Seven.
It's like I said, it's evident they know what they're doing. It doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah.
But it's 7.
Nice.
Nothing I haven't said either, really.
You haven't said much at all.
I think I'm fresh out of things to say this time. We obviously are not up to match fitness on these long podcasts. Julian's constantly checking his watch and make sure
I'm getting messages, so I'm just reading them.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Fancy technology there, bud. I'm going to give it a 6 as well.
Mm-hmm.
At moments, it's a 10. At moments, it's a 2. So, 6.
Okay.
Going to give it a hard 6.
6, yeah. So, yeah. And shout out to all the fans. I want to know what you think about
it. Please don't ban Daniel from Discord.
Yeah, don't ban Daniel.
Don't take anything we say personally. I mean, actually do, but don't hold it against him.
I'm one of the biggest fans in the world. Like, yeah.
Be the kind. Love for you have for this band is like immeasurable. Yeah. I think you guys like these more than I like Polaris and Slipknot and
Anime. I mean, I've got them fucking tattooed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I got a Polaris tattoo. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But like, I feel like...
I got a Pathway Drop tattoo. Yeah,
do you know what I mean? I think it's just like... immeasurable. It's just whole big. It's experience for you.
It is. Yeah.
You know what I mean.
And before you answer, to place us in context, every single white guy has a podcast with like two or three of his stupid friends, and they talk about movies. And at the end, they rate the movie. That's what we're doing, but we use music instead. So tell us, what do you rate Mattel, Matt?
Now, you mentioned that parts it's a 2, parts it's a 10. I don't look at it like that. I look at it as a whole, and I think. Yeah, it's a bit of a roller coaster, but I think that's all part of it. It's, you know, it is a little chaotic. It's a little bit all over the place, but I think that's what makes it so fucking great. And it means that, you know, like the melodic, soulful chorus, it means that when you jump out of that, it packs a bit more of a punch. And I kind of associate that with heaviness and with bangs. So I'm going to give it a 9.
9.
9.
Yep.
There you go.
That's not very generous of you.
0.25.
Has anyone got a 10?
9.25.
I think a 10. Oh, no, you gave this ship a coffin a 10.
A 10. Many 10. Years ago, I gave a hard 10 out, and that was probably the only 10 we'll ever give.
I would have given Cosmic a 10 for feels alone.
For feels alone.
Yeah.
But it doesn't bang at all. But no, it's
not called the feels list.
Yeah. That's why I didn't do that.
It's not called explaining your childhood trauma list.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons that you, just to touch quickly, I think one of the reasons that you like all that soft melodic shit over you is you, I always see as a rock fan that dabbles in heavy, but you're a heavy fan that dabbles in rock.
At my core,
At your core, you're like AC/DC, fucking hard rock, clean vocals, riffs, melodic.
Metal, I grew into metal.
Yeah, whereas you're like, you masturbate to Lorna Shore, you know what I mean? Like, and then, you know, you don't mind a bit of cleans now and then. So I think, like, much like for me, it's when you hear those really... like sort of cleans like that, it's very jarring and it's out of your comfort zone, but it's balls deep in his.
It is, and I'm glad you said that because Syndicate, fuck me dead. M Shadow's lyrics being so like harsh when I first heard them got me into highs and falsettos and that whole side of metal, the cleans, because I was like, Trivium, they never fucking do cleans and that's how metal should be. And then I was like, eventually I was like, oh, yeah cleans, I mean, I can... work from there. So that's how we got here, and I honestly love Avenged Sevenfold. I love what they're doing, even though I have like negative opinions. I still love what they're doing.
They made the listenable parts of hair metal more listenable in the metal scene.
Okay,
yeah,
what a compliment.
And so
but you know what I mean, right? Like
I get you.
Like you can have like a Journey chorus, and it still sounds metal.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Totally.
That wasn't an insult. I can say something mean if you want.
Nah, you're good.
I've been holding off this whole episode.
And shout out to the Death Bats Club, and I would love if more bands kind of forayed into that. And it'd just be a great experience to have. I hope more people can have it. I hope people can, you know, have a similar experience to you and getting the free guitar and all that comes with that, and all the good things it's brought you, mate. And do you want to wrap this one up for us?
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. I'm glad we finally got to do this. Many years in the making. Hit us up on the Bangers List at Twitter, at the Bangers List. Is that correct? Or at hashtag at the Bangers List. What do we say? Yeah. Anyway, at the Bangers List on Twitter. Look us up on Spotify, Apple Music, whatever you want to do. You probably already have if you're listening to this anyway. So don't worry about that. I don't usually close this, so you kind of caught me off guard here. I don't really have anything else to say, but thank you guys for hearing me out and putting up with my shit for so long. I don't know how long we've been doing this for. We've been playing this for, but it feels like it's been like a good 3 or 4 hours, so maybe we got to call it there, hey? We'll see you next time. Cheers.